This is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep. The Blindsloe Hydroelectric Plant and Crystal Lake Salmon Hatchery near Petersburg are working out how to keep the water they share safe for fish. There are higher levels of dissolved gas in the plant's used water than usual, and that environment can cause health issues for fish at the neighboring hatchery. The hydro plant installed a second air vent last week to help reduce the dissolved gas. Petersburg Utility Director Carl Hagerman calls it a step forward.
It did make a slight difference in the total dissolved gas numbers that they were seeing. It's a step in the right direction, but it's not the full step.
The water has more dissolved gas because the plant is using more water to generate power for Petersburg. High levels of dissolved gas can cause sickness and death for fish. Hagerman says the hatchery found a bubble in the gills of one of its dead fish earlier this summer, indicating it was affected by dissolved gas.
So that's a very small sample, but that led them to start measuring the dissolved gas, and sure enough, it was higher than they'd really like it to be.
Adding the new vent hasn't solved the problem entirely. Hagerman says the plant is looking at more ways to bring the levels down.
We're kind of trying to hit on the low-cost, easy methods to address it first, and we haven't exhausted all those ideas yet.
Hatchery management didn't immediately respond to an interview request, but Hagerman says the hydro plant will continue to work with the hatchery to explore the options. Juneau's annual glacier outburst flood is expected soon. Follow coverage from KTOO on the radio, online, and on TV. Visit ktoo.org/flood to find emergency resources and the latest updates, along with resources and advice for how residents should prepare ahead of the flood. As the river rises, tune into 104.3 FM and 360 TV for live public safety updates, including emergency alerts and evacuation orders. The U.S. Coast Guard's new polar icebreaker Storrs arrived in Auk Bay yesterday. It's the ship's first visit to its future home port of Juneau. The 360-foot ship is designed to operate in the Arctic and is meant to expand U.S. presence in the region. It's a stopgap while the Coast Guard builds a new fleet of icebreakers called Polar Security Cutters. Coast Guard officials say it will likely be a few more years before the ship is officially home ported in Juneau. The Coast Guard estimates it will bring hundreds of Coast Guard personnel and their families to Juneau. Alaska's congressional delegation has discussed plans to dock an icebreaker in the capital city for years. Last year, the U.S. Coast Guard made the official announcement after Congress passed a spending bill that appropriated money for the ship's purchase. The Storrs is only visiting this weekend and will travel to downtown Juneau on Saturday afternoon. It will remain moored downtown overnight. The Coast Guard will hold a commissioning ceremony for the ship on Sunday morning. Officials say it is not open to the public. The ship is open for free public tours tomorrow at the Auk Bay Ferry Terminal from 8 to 10 a.m. A ProPublica investigation of the ship published in January revealed it has a design problem and a history of failure. The ship was previously named the Ivic, but was renamed the Storrs in honor of another Coast Guard ship that was stationed in Juneau in the 1950s. The Alaska State Library, Archives, and Museum will host a free screening of a documentary about the original Coast Guard Storrs and its history on Saturday at 1 p.m. The ship is expected to leave Juneau on Monday. And Nanochik's annual Salmon Fest is a three-day music festival that advocates for the protection of healthy salmon through song and educational resources. But it also highlights Alaska Native culture through workshops and demonstrations. KDLL's Hunter Morrison attended one teaching Yupik phrases and has this story.
Between musical performances, Casey Jack takes the stage to introduce himself to an audience of about two dozen people.
I'll just say hi real quick. Maybe some of y'all have heard this. Huaka.
The audience repeats the word back.
You know, you gotta bring that sound from the back of your throat. You gotta like you're almost like clearing a spit. Huaka. One more time.
Jack teaches the group other phrases, like how are you and where are you from, during the 20-minute Yutkin beginner phrase session. Alaska Natives from the Central Yupik region, or Southwest Alaska, call their language Yuktin. The language is one of a handful at the music festival highlighting Alaska Native language and culture. It came after a Native Youth Olympics demonstration and a reading of Yupik children's stories.
In general, Indigenous voices are important to be listening to.
The Yuktin session was put together by an organizer who identified themselves as Foot.
I think that's kind of our duty as people who maybe are not from this land from time immemorial to respect and learn from the people who have been.
While the festival's main focus is the music and environmental message, Foote says Alaska Native people have been represented at Salmon Fest since its kickoff in 2011. Previous festivals have featured Indigenous cooking demonstrations, Native drum sessions, and Alaska Native music headliners. That's in addition to Alaska Native language learning sessions, including one on the Eyak language. Jack, who led this year's Yupik workshop, also goes by his Yupik name, Jakatach. He says demonstrations like the ones at Salmon Fest help keep Indigenous language and culture alive.
Language is intrinsic to identity, you know? You know, how can you be someone without your language? The language is the very vessel that you're using to pass down your values, your culture. It's a reflection of who you are as a people, where you come from, and your environment.
The workshop wasn't the first time Jack has taught his native language. He's a former adjunct Yupik professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. But Jack has never held class at a music festival. Here's Foote, the coordinator.
It's called Salmon Fest, and salmon people and the stewards of this land are Alaska Native people. And so if you're sticking true to it being about salmon, it's probably also going to be about salmon people.
Foote says the festival's environmental advocacy is as much about the people who rely on healthy salmon as the fish themselves. Reporting from the Kenai Peninsula Fairgrounds in Nanilchik, I'm Hunter Morrison.
It's a bit of a mystery where some birds go when they leave Alaska for the winter. As KYUK's Samantha Watson reports, a recent tracking project on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta sought to shed light on birds' worldwide winter homes.
I'm lying belly down among the sedge, lichen, Labrador tea, moss, waiting for a black-bellied plover to sit on a nest.
Rosie Bathrick is a PhD student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, studying bird migration.
She's been really hard to catch. This is our third try on her. She's wily.
Earlier this summer, Bathrick and a team of migratory bird researchers visited a section of tundra near the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta village of Chivak. Their mission was to put trackers on several different bird species to find out where exactly they like to spend their winters. Bathrick says some migratory birds that summer on the YK Delta travel as far south as the tip of Chile, Argentina, or the Pacific Islands, and fly to and from the exact same spots in the Western Hemisphere each year. But other birds, like the ones Bathrick's team is researching, have been known to change it up. They can winter in different spots each year. And so the idea of this tracking project is to look at where those birds are going and identify what might impact the route they take or where they end up.
And how different strategies might expose some species or some populations to these threats more than others, to identify places that are really important and valuable and how we can protect and conserve those, and areas where birds are flexible.
For the past 4 years, the researchers have traveled to Alaska to spend summer months outfitting migratory birds with GPS transmitters that sit between their wings like little backpacks. Previously, they focused on birds in the Upper Cook Inlet and in Kotzebue. This year was the first on the YK Delta, based at the old Chivak Church-turned-Waterfowl Research Camp. Each day, Bathrick says the 7-person team loaded up on coffee and oatmeal before spending the day walking the tundra, looking for nests of 6 YK Delta bird species in the low brush. Once they found a nest of a species they were looking for, they hid a mesh net trap that could pop up once the bird sat on the nest. Then they would hide themselves belly down in the tundra until springing the trap to safely outfit the bird with a backpack transmitter. But between backpack fittings, the team was also looking for a rare bird.
You know, we were out here to try to find a long-billed dowitcher and find them at the southern extent of their range. We know they breed out here in really small numbers.
The bird is a sleek, brown speckled creature with, as its name proclaims, a long, straw-like bill. It's rare to spot in the area. Bathrick says it became her unicorn, her Bigfoot. Thus began a quest story.
Like the most exciting part about the research is the not knowing, the mystery of what's going to happen, what we'll be able to find.
Bathrick and the team of researchers searched for the long-billed dowager nest, but weren't necessarily hopeful. They continued to trap and put transmitters on the other, more abundant species they were able to find. But in their first 2 days in the field, Bathrick and the team found a long-billed dowager nest. It was a big deal. Bathrick says it was an emotional moment.
I've definitely cried at finding nests, especially for species that I've worked with for multiple years that I feel like an understanding with, or I feel like it just feels like such a gift when I'm able to find a nest.
Bathrick sees the work of the sometimes hopeless search as a microcosm of a broader life philosophy, to be teachable and open to what reveals itself, to be trusting that it will come if it's meant to.
It's like there's some sign that there's something that wants to be known, like we should be knowing something here, and this is an opportunity to learn it.
As summer fades into fall, Bathrick says some birds are beginning their journeys south, soon to stop in other parts of Alaska and California. Come this fall, the researchers will watch through the transmitter backpacks how and where the birds make their winter home. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
And in Juneau, it's 66 degrees and the clouds have rolled in. There's heavy rain in the forecast tonight and going into the weekend, with highs in the low 60s and lows in the mid 50s. And tonight, there's also a southeast wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with precipitation between 1/2 and 3/4 of an inch possible. This is KTOO.